Rudy said that the mind was the slayer of the soul. Yeah, I'm sure you've all heard that probably multiple times. And he may not be the only person who said it. But what he didn't say was feelings and emotions are the slayer of the soul. Circumstance is not the slayer of the soul. The journey through life is not the slayer of the soul. It's your mind. And mostly, it's the mind reacting to the emotions, the journey, circumstance, and creating a dialogue, if you will, often not in your favor, often a critical dialogue about why me, why this, how can I get past this, how can I get out of this, this is horrible, what next, how can I move forward, you know, all the dialogue that most of us attribute to the mind that has profound impact on the day-to-day life of each of us. And it really does impact what would be the deeper, restful, still-pointedness of the observer of all this, which you can call, if not the soul, the doorway to the soul, the ability to find a resting place, a place of comfort, a place of observational awareness, where it is really not you reacting to the life in front of you, it is you simply witnessing it, watching it. That is not easy because we are trained from childhood to be reactive. We're trained to look at life and to judge it. We're trained to be intellectual, to think about what is happening. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the problem is that if you become lost in that and thinking about that, and you don't have an alternative space in which to rest and be restored, if you will, in life, then the mind becomes far more active, far more problematic in a way. And for many people, it is a tormenting experience, which creates disturbance in the emotional field, disturbance in the physical bodily field, and all of the parts of your being that start to be involved in what the mind is saying, you start to feel pretty awful. And then, of course, the mind gets involved with that. What do I do? And how do I get past this? And what does the doctor say? And what do all these specialists say about how to deal with intellectually the field of dreams, if you will, or the field of life that we all live in? And that kind of creates such a constant involvement. And of course, it creates a source for emotional reaction. Some of the things that arise are so enjoyable and pleasurable and beautiful and lovely that you run toward them and you engage them with emotion. Some things are very dark and difficult and you fear them and you have hesitation and you have stress and you have anxiety and you go into these places again with the mind very dynamic in terms of churning it all up. Western culture just doesn't give us a lot of alternative. It doesn't teach us very much about where to go when all of this mind disturbance is happening. And so the soul, if you will, Rudy's idea of this still-pointed refuge in us, becomes inaccessible. And whether it's destroyed by the mind is a question mark, but whether it's hidden dramatically by the mind is not. The mind really obscures the very thing you need to navigate the circumstances, the happenstances of life. And if you haven't found the navigational force, if you haven't found the stillness that lets you look at it from a different perspective and it through a different lens, then it's constantly blinded by the activity of the world around you. So the requirement, really, in the best of worlds is that you stop. My old adage is stop, sit, stay. Go back in. Sit down long enough so that you can actually make the journey into ah. And when you arrive at ah, there is a reflection of something so profoundly deep that it, in a way, gives a perspective on the noise, on the incredible noise that you have around you, which is the mind's interaction with circumstance and life. And you can finally just look at it and go, okay. It helps you see the path through the thicket of day-to-day existence. It helps you move clearly, cleanly along the path. And it allows you some sense that you are looked after, that there is something there. And it's so funny because it's not a there in the terms of deep physical, yes, I got you, I can hold on to you, I can take care of you. It's very quiet. You know, it's a kind of like a hug, but it's a feeling that you do not experience unless you go in and sit and touch this space, which becomes, from my experience, a greater and greater effort as you get older, because the outer noise shifts in so many ways. The mind events start to become so much more dynamic in a way. It's hard to believe when you're middle-aged that it can become that much more, but trust me, it is a noise factor that is built upon all of the memories and thoughts and histories of your life, both building and reflecting on themselves and then falling away and crumbling. And you have to watch all of that. And it's very confusing to the mind. And the mind in a confused state only makes itself stronger, desperately trying to hold on to the strength and the power and the focus of what it has always known to be itself. As that starts to fall away, the need for the inner still pointedness, the approach to the depth of one's soulfulness is really worthy, really wonderful. And very few people in our Western culture know much about it or try it or do these various strange practices that go through the mind, like mindfulness. I'm not that I'm just denigrating mindfulness, because I think it does work its way into something else, but making the mind a focal point is in some ways counteractive. On the other hand, because we don't all have meditative life, because we don't all have someone knocking on the door and saying, hey, you should sit down for a half hour here and get it together, meaning get out of the noise realm, find your way into the still pointed thing, that makes it's hard because you're not led to do it. Of course, and I've talked about this quite a bit recently, Western culture offers another version of that. And it's a way, and I'll briefly go toward it, which is the teaching of be a good person, be kind, be nice, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Great Western teachings, which don't involve people of our culture sitting down for an hour or half an hour and doing the soul searching. But what it means is when you start to have reactivity to the world around you, which is normally mind, and you start to interact with it in a negative way or an annoyed way or in a confused way, the teaching at that moment is rather simple. Be a good person, meaning react differently, change your reaction, don't react, find a way to bring other into place so that they're more important than you, if you will, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So rather than more important, maybe equally important. But you start to do this turnaround inside of the outside circumstance that gives you the tension and the drama and the closeness of the mind that gets in the way. And then when you are nice or you are kind or you are good, something really interesting happens, not unlike the meditative experience. You feel like open. You feel good. You feel like you're a blessing to the world, if you will, and that the world comes back to you as a kind of a sweet embrace because your goodness creates atmospheric goodness that you live in. Not to say that is a manifestation of the soul, but it is very close to what the soul feels like. When you go out into that space or deep into that space, it's very similar. It's a place of embrace and going like that. Good. Good. And it's really a remarkable kind of acknowledgement. Now, if the mind grabs hold of that acknowledgement, you will have the beginning again of the destruction of soul. Because when the ego separates from its own acts of goodness and kindness, when the ego starts to build itself up as a result of you being kind and good and all of that, it just creates more drama for the ultimate journey in this lifetime, which is the breaking down of that outer structure that thinks, well, I'm a good person. That's just as big a problem as that you're a bad person if you're creating a outside mask, if you will, for yourself, a sense of who I am, which is based on mind. Mind is only there to help navigate the world. The mind is there to help understand the world, and it can. And if you get quiet enough and deep enough in yourself and expansive enough, the mind becomes very clear. It becomes very vivid, and you start to know the world in a way. And it's not just reacting to the world, it's witnessing the world. It's no longer at that point a part of the destruction of the soul. It's now a reflection of the soul. And a great mind, and we've seen them, we've heard about them, we've read them, are people who see clearly, who see and enunciate and express the nature of life through the largeness of their expanded mind. And then, of course, if they get to their expanded heart or their expanded belly, gut, intuitive being, and you get all these aligned, you have a really big open doorway to your soul. And the mind is no longer working as a problem in terms of soul. It's working in conjunction with soul. It's working as an adjunct to the soul. And you become this incredible vehicle for transmission, if you will, of kindness, goodness, love, all of those qualities of being that the world and the universe benefits from in such a profound way. And then this old adage of save one person, you save the world, you start to live that life and you do your goodness and your kindness and your service, if you will, all the time, not because you feel the need to do it, but because this openness of being, the soulfulness of your being starts to radiate out into the world regularly. And you become a very open being without the credit, if you will. Nobody's going to come back and say, oh, you're such a great person. And even if they do, it's not like you buy that. It's because you know to the degree that it's true, it has very little to do with you other than your profound activity of practice, work, and surrender to this larger force. Now, there are various versions of working, and there is the working in the field of your life all day long, every day, getting through the manipulations of the world around you and the circumstances, and it's very hard. And sitting every day during your life or having a moment or taking a breath and going and letting the soul force, letting the universe, letting the larger picture kind of manifest again is a gift if you have the capacity to do that. And it will help guide you through the moment-to-moment nature of your life. And I am a big promoter of that. But I will tell you, in a war zone, there are people on the front line. The front line experience of human life is very different than being back in the back lines, preparing meals and helping people and, you know, getting people to doctors and all the things that happen in a war zone. In the front line, you are under attack. You are witnessing the possibility of ending your life at any moment, at any second. And you are aware of the wounds that happen. You are aware of the suffering, the lack of food, the cold, on and on, more so than people on the back lines. And I mention all that because old age, aging, the inevitable journey of ourselves into the ends of our lives, bring us to a kind of front line where you are witnessing life in a whole other level than you witness it in midlife, young, early life. It's all vaguely similar, but it's like the whole life has been a training to get to the front lines. Now, usually, you know, in war zones, they take the young and fit and put them on the front line because they can handle this thing, supposedly. Real life puts you on the front lines at the end. It's just you and the absolute war zone of disintegration, attack by all sorts of forces, both mental, emotional, physical, mind, etc. It just, you are getting attacked from a million different levels, and they are all life-threatening. It is not theoretical, it is actual, and you are there in the dynamic of pain, suffering, and embattlement, if you will, with just the simple facts of day-to-day survival. It's really interesting, and I'm watching that unfold, and my biggest teaching that comes out of it is gratitude for having worked my whole life in terms of letting go, opening, recognizing that the mind is the slayer of the soul, and having worked for decades to release that as much as possible, to open my heart as much as possible, to get to the intuitive thing that guides me through the day to day, and to feel this gratitude. On the other hand, in the final battles of life, and who knows what the final ones are, but in the late ages of old age, the frontline experience is really a demanding moment. And if you don't have the strength of having worked and practiced and done what you're supposed to do, you will crumble. You will just crumble. And that's not what you want. It's not, you don't want to just crumble. And believe me, there are a lot of forces that will move you in that direction. But what you want to do is find that way into the space of soulfulness that understands the larger journey, that knows that what is happening, even on the front lines at the end of your life, is noble, is part of the totality, has always been in the cards, that the impermanence that Buddha talked about is now revealing itself in ways that are no longer intellectual or just images of dreams of something that may happen, like a narrative. No, it's real. It's real. And, you know, if there's ever a time for being able to go, please help me to surrender, the time gets to a point where it's not an act of meditation. It's an act of being, perhaps of survival, but even giving yourself over to something that is beyond survival, because you, unfortunately, do not survive. On the other hand, if you have touched the infinite, if you have touched your soul, you realize that the transfer of attention from the part that's going to fall away to the part of you that senses itself as eternal becomes a smart move. It's a wise move, a thoughtful move, an emotionally correct move. Move inside, find that space, and it's really crucial. Now, I was listening to a talk on YouTube because these things pop up all the time. And some guy was talking about the life of Buddha, And I don't know if any of this is true because I never know what's true on YouTube. But they were saying that Buddha in his 80s, I did never knew he lived to 80, was so in such pain because of his back that he couldn't continue all of his talks. He would often have to ask other students to come in and sit and finish his talks, and he would have to go off to another room. And they said that his hearing was going away, his vision was going away. I had never heard any of that. I don't know if it's true, but the image of Buddha having to enter that mindscape, that field, and that to go off, as they say, into a place where he could just sit and be meditative and quiet as a kind of release and survival mechanism makes total sense to me. That this refuge of soul, this refuge of deep inside, is no longer just a talking point. It is an absolute requirement. And that Buddha, having difficulty in his body and his mind, and I can only imagine some emotional stuff as well, just because I'm sensing some of that myself. It's really, you look at all of that and you go, there is only one place left. And it's in. And it is also possibly not touched by the outer disintegration. And there's still going to be some doorway, transitional space, I suspect, between breathing and not breathing, between having a body and not having a body. And we can only imagine and talk about that. And none of us with real authority. Although Walt Whitman had a line that I really love, and I'm going to buy into it. And he says that death is other than what we think and luckier. And I happen to love that. I love that. And I don't know if it's true, but my mind has gone yes to that. And I'm going to project that to all of you, that this whole journey that we're all on, successfully or unsuccessfully, and I don't even know what that means really, because I think we all get challenged in ways that may be way beyond us in certain points. But my feeling is live a good life, live a kind life, be nice, put some others ahead of yourself, do unto them as you would unto yourself. And then when the moments come and your body falls away and your mind falls away and your emotions are all over the place and there are tensions and stresses and all these things that you never even imagined would be there but happened in the front lines, you will have this little voice in yourself saying, death is unknowable, but it's lucky. And live with that. And I think it's a good note to bring this to closure. I think we're all of us on a journey that ultimately is lucky. In other words, there is something of a blessing, a hug, a still pointed joy that awaits us. And, you know, right or wrong, I will tell you, when I sit still and I step away from the bodily disintegrations and mind disintegrations and everything else, when I sit with you and I go to these places that I've been taught to go to, it feels lucky. So thank you for coming. I'm going to leave shortly for my granddaughter's birthday, but if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to try to address them.
Bruce, I have a question. So when you're going in, or maybe even when you're opening up, how do you work with letting go of that part of yourself that like needs to see yourself doing it to like be like, okay, it's happening? Like that's I'm starting to let go, but I'm
love that. I love that question. You know, that's the ultimate question, because you know, when Buddha goes off to sit in that quiet room away from the pain of his sitting up and teaching and the, all of that stuff, and his mind, his eyes going, his hearing going, he's doing it for the benefit of his self, his bodily self. He's getting away from the suffering on some level, but he's going somewhere to do that. And in a way, he is choosing that. I think maybe there are people out there, and maybe some of you sitting here are people who have already gone past that, you know, that ability to think of the me and the equation. And that's great. I don't think most of us can do that. Not easily. I have had moments where I thought there was no Bruce, you know, there was just nobody there and this was all just happening. But I'm telling you, as long as there's a body, as long as there are feelings and emotions, and as long as there's pain and all of that stuff, I think it's hard to really be totally removed from the me and it. But the it, the other, becomes much greater than the me. And I think if you forgive yourself for being a body and a mind and a structure that's being taken apart, if you just forgive yourself for what it feels like to go through that, I think that's enough. I'm not the ultimate sayer with this. I really don't know. There are people in non-duality teachings who go, there should be no you reacting. I can't teach that. I definitely have had moments where I thought that was the case, where I just felt it doesn't matter. But pain is a real, it brings you right back into something that you're not prepared for. That's what I call front lines of aging, you know, a place where the work is much more demanding than when you're in your youth and you can let go of everything, because nothing, you know, your body just kind of falls by the wayside. At some point, your body is just knocking, spiking at you all the time. That's different. It's just a different experience. And boy, do you need to be ready for that. And you have to be humble in that. And I think the humility of spiritual search is really potent, that in the end, something much greater is going on and you are part of that. So if you get to the point where there's no you sort of acknowledging what's going on, great. I wish you all the best. If you can carry that through to the last millisecond of manifested form, beautiful. But if you can't, accept your humanity, accept your reality, be kind to yourself, not just everybody else. You know, do unto yourself as you would do unto others. You know, that's not a bad teaching. And if you really get that balance right, you go, okay, it's a level of profound acceptance, or what I talked about a few weeks ago, neutrality, you know, where you're not doing this for you. I mean, of course you're doing it for you, but it's a neutral point. It's not a big you. It's a kind of a tiny little you that is watching this enormous, enormous transformative thing happening and going, wow. Or as my mother-in-law went, And I go, great. So again, don't condemn yourself for failing to get to total selflessness. I don't know what to say. If you do, congratulations. And don't take it personally. But if you don't get to total selflessness, just go, I'm a human being. I'm another molecule in this amazing journey of manifested life. Does that help at all?
Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yes, Wendy.
What I've heard Rudy say, Bruce, is, and I'm curious if he or you like view it potentially like that. When I experience the mental and emotional complex that feels overwhelming at times, sometimes less, sometimes more, as basically being given a responsibility to digest those tensions and that complex, because maybe I can, and that it's still just to be kind of turned into spiritual fuel, like spiritual food. So that just kept coming up. So could you just speak to that for a moment, how you see that maybe?
I think that's a process. I think it's a real process of sort of using the outer to help inform and bring you to the inner. You know, the work, Rudy's work really was taking on all of your noise, all of your emotion, all of your drama, all of that stuff, and transmuting it, if you will, into a kind of directive inward where it becomes transformed into pure energy. And I like that. You know, I think that's real. But it gets harder and harder to do as you get older, because the stakes seemingly are higher. They're not really, but they are seemingly higher. And, you know, and that work becomes softer, gentler, and you don't have the same skill set anymore. So you just have to get to a point where it's reduced to a sort of simple letting go or opening or acceptance. And it's not grinding all that stuff through anymore, because you, hopefully you've done the groundwork, you know, you've done the preparation. But if you haven't, it's a hard time at the end of life to do that. That's all I can tell you. It's very hard to get into the drama of that as a person whose energy level just isn't there. So that's why Rudy said it's life's work. And a lot of the work is preparation, you know, in the background, so you can get to the front lines and have a support system that brings you food and takes care of you and, you know, all brings you what you need. But this is the work, the nature of the work, and Rudy always called it the work, evolves. That's all I can say. And, you know, right now you have work to do. You're working, you know, you have books and you have things, you have stuff to do, you have children, you have, I mean, you have all this work. That for me is kind of gone. But the level of work for me remains in a dramatic way, in a dramatic way, but it's so small, but it's dynamic. I mean, I can hardly begin to express the why so much massive stuff comes up and how you have to go, nope. And I could only go nope, and some days better than others, because I practiced for a long time going like that. You know, I don't have to take it. I don't have to be one with that, because I am luckily, and I use the word lucky, connected to the soul that shines forth enough to obliterate much of that stuff. Now, there are days it doesn't show up. And I have to tell you, that's part of the journey and part of the test, because for you to continue moving forward without the love and embrace, it's not unlike a parent saying, you do it. Try it on your own. You do it. It's kind of a gift in a way, but it feels like, what do you mean, me do it? You do. I'm not ready to do it. Having that journey handed over to you in some way is really meaningful. And at the end, it really is handed over to you. But somewhere in that background, that creative force that loved you when it sent you into the world still loves you. And it will reflect itself back to you. And it will be very comforting if you're lucky. And we think we're all lucky. Anybody else?
Thank you, Bruce, so much.
Welcome. Okay. Blanche and I are going to help her sister move into something that should be assisted living, but isn't quite at that level next week. Not the coming week, the week after. And we may actually still be there on the Sunday that I'm supposed to teach in Los Angeles, in which case we will be missing a class. I'm not sure if I want to, or even if I'll be able to send out a note telling you there's no class. You can try to check and see what happens. If there is a class, I will definitely send a note. But it might be another few weeks after, it might be another month before we're together again. I just alert you to that possibility. But if you get a note, you can show up. And thank you for coming today. It means a lot just to see you all. There's a lot of love here for everybody. And thank you. I really appreciate it. And I wish you a wonderful couple of weeks, or maybe a little bit longer. Just take care of yourselves, okay? And each other, as they say on the news, take care of yourself and each other. Nice line. Lots of love.